You're listening to the Higher Ed Athletics Podcast, brought to you by Athletic Director U, where I focus on both current events and governance in both higher education and intercollegiate athletics by having thought-provoking conversations with industry experts and leaders. On this episode, I sit down with University of Oregon Athletic Director Rob Mullins.
I want to first focus on the decade of the duck, which has been labeled by the athletic department successes of not only football, but a variety of duck teams. Football has been to two national championship appearances, including the inaugural college football playoff, women's basketball, Final Four, and arguably the top student athlete coming back in the sport right now, men's basketball, the last few years, 2016 went to the Elite Eight, 2017 the Final Four, and then the 2019 season had a fantastic conference tournament run, and all the way to the Sweet 16 was a really highlight of the tournament. Softball, College World Series appearances in 14, 15, 17, and 18, I believe. And then women's track and field and cross country, which I've been at schools where this is one of the main sports. This is really impressive. The Triple Crown in the 2016-17 academic year. So with that success, what is it about this university and this athletic department that has led to so much winning? And then did it happened to be with kind of football success or the Nike partnerships kind of inviting that to other programs, kind of spreading the wealth as far as facility upgrades, becoming a recipe for success?
Well, first, great to have you in Eugene. Appreciate you being here. So, I mean, we have some basic pillars, right? And we want to provide an exceptional student-athlete experience for everybody, for all 450 student-athletes. And as a part of that, in addition to providing incredible support academically and opportunities socially, you want to compete for championships, right? Mm-hmm. We want to compete at the highest level. And we're fortunate to be in one of the greatest conferences in the country. And, you know, if you're going to compete in your own league, you better bring it. And so we've gone about, and sort of the short answer is all the above to your, you know, how we got there. So when you tick them off, obviously we're at a great institution with an incredibly supportive and passionate fan base. But, you know, there are some key ingredients. That key ingredients are we have an incredible facility infrastructure. Thanks in large part to Mr. and Mrs. Knight, who've inspired a lot of other donors to make sure that we have what our student athletes need to compete at the highest level. Obviously, we have a unique relationship with Nike. Mm-hmm. Eugene, Oregon, Hayward Field is the birthplace of Nike between Coach Bowerman and student athlete Phil Knight. So there is it's part of the DNA. And as building from that DNA, as innovation has become a big piece of Oregon athletics. And when you put those two together and you find the right people who are a fit, who share that vision, who can support where we're headed, then it starts to come together. And you asked the right question is, yes, it all started with football. Obviously, we have a great track and field tradition, second to none. But then when you layer in what Rich Brooks was able to build over a long term in football, then you have a succession plan to Mike Bellotti, who continued the climb, and then another succession plan to Chip Kelly, who with his innovation really captured college football and the fan base, and it certainly captured our fan base. So there was a perfect storm of all those elements coming together: great facilities, incredible relationship with Nike, and the innovation that infiltrated, you know, kind of our culture, and then Chip and the visibility. We were able to leverage the visibility of football and kind of the tempo, pace, and create something here that we were able to leverage for a lot of other sports. And so off the piggyback of the visibility and the success of football, it opened up a lot of doors for a lot of other programs and allowed us to build this goal of broad-based excellence.
Yeah, and I was walking through town or through campus yesterday, and the softball stadium is tremendous. I think that I can only imagine that game environment for such a successful softball program with that facility, and then the new facility upgrades to was it Hayward Field,
yeah,
track and field. I was here 2 years ago before it started, and I was blown away by how great of a facility it was traditional-wise, but then seeing how you all are kind of bridging that gap between tradition, keeping it, and restoring it to try and modernize it too. Is it the World
Championships, yeah, 2021. So obviously, you know, historic Hayward Field had a ton of tradition. And, you know, our community is labeled Tracktown USA. Yes. We are the epicenter for the sport in this country and one of the, you know, iconic venues in the world. And, you know, it has been for a long time. And we wanted to make sure we were positioned to really be that epicenter for the sport for the next 50 years. And again, thank you to the generosity of Phil and Penny Knight. We're able to make sure that, you know, the track and field history and tradition is captured here, but that we are prepared to remain a visionary for that sport into the future. And for those who haven't been to Eugene, Hayward Field sits right in the middle of our campus. And Jane Sanders Stadium, you know, a world-class softball facility, is, you know, a softball's throw from Hayward Field. And, you know, that's... That Jane Sanders Stadium is a great symbol for where we've come over the last decade. You know, we were able to build a successful program with one of the worst facilities in the Pac-12, maybe even one of the worst in Division I. But with a vision, we were able to go to a former football student athlete, had a lot of business success, and wanted to honor the legacy of his spouse on a facility, and he gave us the money to build a world-class softball facility, which has only accelerated, you know, the performance in the sport.
That, you don't hear that every day, that type of alumni donors.
Yeah, no, he was Mr. Sport. Sanders was very, very special, and you know, with his vision and our vision, we were able to build something that, you know, again, highlights the fan experience, but really was driven out of the student-athlete experience. And it is a great place to see a softball game.
The athletic success. So how does that translate to the rest of the university? Everyone, at least most people listening to this, are going to understand the Doug. They might not know the name, the Doug Flutie effect of college applications typically go up with successes. University of Oregon's definitely had that with the football national championship appearances. There was definitely a boost, which raises the quality of the candidate pool and helps the institution. What is it about that the university can get? It seems like it's almost free advertising when you're playing on such a big stage of the even your conference tournament run, winning that many games for men's basketball, your women's basketball team getting all the way to the Final Four, and then the football success obviously continued in the brand. What does that do? I mean, is there royalties involved that the institution gets, or is it just the brand exposure? I mean, what's an athletic director and a president, when they're talking about those things, think about?
Well, for us, obviously, we want a program that mirrors the values of our campus and of our community. And it is a marketing arm. There's no doubt that there's, you know, there's nothing else that invites 60,000 people to this community on one day. Not only the economic impact for our community, but the visibility, the opportunity that on 7 Saturdays a year we can host these events that bring people to our campus. This is an outstanding institution in an outstanding community with a beautiful campus, and we love getting people here. And you know, when people take a deeper look, whether that's visiting here for an event or maybe watching something on TV that excites them to go to uoregon.edu and take a deeper dive, or you know, when we go play in a big bowl game, we work closely with enrollment management to host an event in the city that we're in to introduce that community to our university. We have an outstanding university with great people and incredible leadership. And when people take a deeper dive, that's when you see, you know, the number of visitors go up that go to the visitor center to take a campus tour. You know, when you have, you know, extreme success, you know, at a high level, sure, applications go up. And as you mentioned, the quality of applications go up. So, you know, when we can capture all that and get people to take a deeper look, we have a great institution. And at the end of the day, you have to have, you know, all those elements of a great institution to attract students. What we're able to do is maybe get people who wouldn't otherwise take a look. And when they take a look, they see the greatness that is here.
Yeah, I love walking around the campus. For those listening, I'll probably mention this in the introduction. My twin brother works in the athletic department here with the football program. But when I visit more the academic side than just the athletic facilities. The facilities are great, but the traditional, the brick buildings of the actual academic side of the institution is tremendous too. So I can only imagine when they're coming here for an event, especially a lot of the facilities, even the basketball arena is right on the heart of campus too, which is a great, great arena. I want to talk about business and accounting background that you yourself came in with, and that's from looking at your background, that's been the majority of your career, and you've been able to really make some changes at your stops. So there are different routes to the AD chair, but how do you think your background and understanding of business, accounting, and taking seriously fiscal responsibility help prepare you to lead Oregon athletics at the time that you were hired, and then maybe going into the next decade? What's that background give to an athletic director?
Well, I mean, having that degree, the business degree, and then having that work experience in Ernst & Young certainly gave me a way to enter the business, mm-hmm. Of college athletics, and I was able to do that through, kind of the business operations. But what just structurally what it gave me to do is I'm a process-driven person, so I can understand how processes develop results, as you move up to kind of a leadership role, those processes still matter, particularly when you're running a complex, highly visible organization. So we've been able to build a lot of, processes. But, the other thing, too, is I think it really, because of my financial background, I'm focused on efficiencies, right? How can we take the pool of resources that we have that may or may not look like, our competitive peers, our aspirational peers, and how can we best align those to allow us to, one, support our student-athlete experience, our highest priority, and at the same time, compete at the highest level. So, I think that financial background really allows me to kind of align, create processes, and then, obviously, like any good account, we want to measure. So we're always measuring our performance.
Yeah, I can imagine it would, within the knowing the numbers best, you could probably find a strategic way to position the success of your athletic program by trying to figure out what makes the most fiscal sense.
We use a lot of metrics, right? So yeah. We measure ourselves. We fully understand the marketplace. We understand where we fit in the marketplace, and have a good sense of how we need to align to make sure that we are competing at the highest level, or said another way, maximizing our resources. Yeah. And one of our key goals is that we always want to enhance our resources to match our expectations, and as we continue to improve in performance, our expectations are raised along with it. There's a lot of pieces that work. But I would think that the part that probably gets overlooked the most about our success is, one, the people. I mean, there's a lot of people know about the facilities, about the Nike relationship, but it's about the people. The other thing is that, we have developed a system that allows us to be very, very efficient.
Especially with higher ed, the governmental support of the states, not necessarily here in Oregon, but really nationwide, is kind of under attack whenever you see budget cuts. And that's why I think another reason why hopefully future athletic directors will have a better sense of the fiscal responsibility is, I think presidents might be looking for that in an athletic director in the future, the way things are headed. I mean, you have higher ed academic buildings are being renovated and redone. Athletic facilities are starting to need to be modernized at a lot of campuses. So do you see that as kind of a trend that might pick up?
Let's just use University of Oregon, for example. Obviously, we've seen a decline in state appropriations for mm-hmm. higher ed, particularly to our campus. And that puts a lot of pressure on tuition, right? So cost of education. Here at the University of Oregon, the athletic department pays dollar for dollar rack rate. 85% of our student-athletes or non-resident. So before we do anything else in a year, as tuition goes up, as cost of scholarships go up, we have to find those new resources, because we don't get any subsidy or any break from campus. So we're buying roughly 250 scholarships a year. That's up to around $13 million right now. So yeah, that's a key piece for us. But I think any leader needs to understand how the foundational fiscal elements work in any program. But yes, there's a lot of pressure on campuses these days because the cost of education is under attack. And then you look at state appropriations, it makes it difficult.
I want to talk about the president and athletic director relationship and transitions of a new presidency. So you are part of the president's executive leadership team here at the University of Oregon. For those unaware that many ADs actually serve on these leadership cabinets, can you give us an idea of what the expectation and responsibility of that role is? And any tips for those in line to be an athletic director and what they could do now to prepare for a cabinet position one day?
Sure. I have a direct report to the president here at the University of Oregon, which I appreciate. I work closely with his senior team. So that's why I sit on the senior staff or on the cabinet. Mm-hmm. We meet weekly, and I'm fortunate to be there because, one, I can share what's happening within athletics and the challenges and the goals and how we can all work together. The other thing is it really keeps me plugged into campus of the issues that they're facing and the challenges and you know how we're approaching them on campus to solve them to make sure that we remain a great institution. So my advice to those that are aspiring to be in that role is find, there are lots of committees on campuses, right?
Exactly.
Find a way to get engaged with your peer group. Because you want to be plugged into what's happening on campus. You want to be a resource. You want to be an ally. You want to lend your perspective. And one of the things that, you know, in our role in athletics is we have a lot of connection with the community at our events, whether they be athletic events or donor events. So I can provide a lot of perspective from a recruiting standpoint. You know, we have a lot of prospective student athletes mm-hmm. come through our building. We can share, you know, their views of our campus. And I also have a lot of interaction with fans and alumni. And so I can also bring that perspective to bear as well.
There has been presidential turnover during your time at Oregon, which we talked about before going on air. It's really common nowadays for universities, college and university presidents to only serve short terms because a lot of times they're going to be brought in to focus on a challenge that the institution's facing. Now, in the future, institutions are going to be facing a lot of challenges, and so that might mean more presidential turnover. But as the athletic director, if you're going through that, what can an athletic director do to best communicate with and get a new president up to speed on the inside status of the athletic department? And what type of info would you recommend to athletic directors or those that are going to be ADs to have prepared for the new president when you go into that first conversation or at least that first meeting where they want to know a brief of everything that you're doing? How do you work through that transition?
Well, I mean, we've had a few of them here. Mm-hmm. You know, in my 9 years here, we've had five different presidents that counts two interims, each with their own different style. And as a campus, we've seen a lot of change, right? In 9 years, we've gone from being part of a system to having an independent board, which is a different change, and, you know, having a board of trustees that's focused solely on our campus.
Which I think I read was one of the president's
that
kind
was his
goals.
Mission. Yeah,
and
it was
then
his
he
mission.
Did it and then and was done. And yeah. That's why I'm talking about the transition.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that the process of pushing for that change played a role in his exit. Let's just say it that way. But I would say in general for me, having been through a few, you know, obviously, you know, we've kept our goals pretty simple. And so we almost create an annual report ourselves. What we've done the last couple of times is created a SWOT analysis, kind of what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are, where we see our opportunities and the threats. And then the key academic metrics, obviously, you know, what kind of student athletes are recruiting, how are they performing in the classroom. Everybody will be well aware of the performance that they see on the field. It's all the other things that I think a president would need to understand, you know, the diversity of our population. We're one of the most diverse student groups on campus. You know, how we contribute back to campus directly, financially, but also, you know, from a marketing standpoint. So, you know, those are the things that we have prepared. We've kept that document fresh for not only just for president, but whether we hire a new provost or a new dean, and we want to make a connection right off the bat.
A lot of people don't realize that the president is actually pretty big involved with whether it's conferences or the NCAA in general. I mean, they have to be knowledgeable about that side of things, and that's where an athletic director, I'm guessing, can kind of help. They need to understand the Pac-12, what's going on with other schools in the conference.
Obviously, in any league, the presidents are the decision makers at the end of the day on the major items. So I work closely with President Schill here in what's being discussed amongst the AD group, amongst the Pac-12 Council. And so, yes, we talk regularly about the direction and the vision of the league and you know, our position on the goals.
Yeah, I think it gets lost in translation sometimes of the NCAA that the presidents do have a big sway in the conversational topics there in the legislation. So the last topic I want to touch on has to do with self-sustainability of an athletic department, and then we'll wrap up. So I read in a story from back whenever you accepted the position at Oregon, it was the Kentucky athletic director, Mitch Barnhart, a quote that really stuck out to me when I was thinking about this transition of a question. It said, Rob was the architect of that, talking about the athletic department being successful enough financially to give money back to the institution annually. This is why you're at UK. And it said, he really understands the relationship between athletics and academics. He's crossed those barriers and blended a relationship between the two. Now, when I think about that quote, and I think about your background working in the understanding the fiscal responsibility of the position, hearing you answer about the president-AD relationship and the importance of that, I want to introduce to this question is, there's a confusion in understanding whether athletic departments are self-sustaining from the institution and how to actually read the data, because there's been an increased attention. With more money comes more scrutiny in college athletics, and it's been placed on athletic departments spending and becoming self-sufficient without really any help from the institutions is what that means. But the USA Today's annual database makes it seem like athletics operates irresponsibly. They challenge the institutions that say we're self-sustainable. And so why is that confusing when someone's trying to study the two? Why is it so confusing when someone's studying the higher ed details and the athletic spending?
Because each campus is unique, right? There's exactly. So many, everyone is different. And it's hard to create a pure apples to apples across private schools, public schools, because we all have a variety of different ways that we operate. You know, some school, you know, here at the University of Oregon, as I mentioned, you know, we're self-supporting. You know, in fact, we pay an overhead back to campus, direct overhead for central services support. So, you know, that's our contribution. We pay, you know, rack rate for scholarships. And as I mentioned, 85% of ours are non-resident. So we're basically writing we're raising $13 million a year that we then write a check back to the institution for scholarships. But it, you know, it is so difficult because it's hard to create one system that makes everything comparable. Some schools are separate 501c3s, you know, some schools have separate foundations. You know, for us, I'll give you one example that's hard for us. You know, we have all of our debt sits stateside, sits with us. So when you see our budget of $110 million, that includes all of our facility debt as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some institutions, when you look at their budget, their debt is housed somewhere else in a foundation. So that's why it's complicated. There's just, each one has a unique setup. And so it's hard to, you know, pull from that and get an exact apples to apples comparison. The part that is frustrating when you work in this business is there's so many, you know, things that don't get counted. You know, again, this visibility, it matters. You know, you referenced the Flutie effect. I think I've read an article recently that said there's the Saban and Sweeney effect. And when you look mm-hmm. at what's happened at those two institutions from an enrollment standpoint with the success of their football programs, it's amazing. And we've seen some of that here. You know, when we've had high-level success in football,
Heisman
men's
trophy.
Basketball, yeah, it drives eyeballs. I mean, at the University of Oregon, we've been a part of, I can't remember the exact number, but certainly two or three of the highest 10 watch cable shows ever. I mean, when you look at the numbers of people that are checking out your program, and if just a small percentage of those take a deeper dive, I mean, and you're paying nothing for that. I mean, it's incredible marketing. In addition to, 7 times a year, you have 60,000 people on your campus and the opportunity to do fundraising events or orientations or introduce people to your campus in your colleges. You know, our president throws a phenomenal pregame event that has a lot of influential people in our community and from our alumni getting engaged with our university through a football game.
And the economic impact of putting on a football event the Eugene community.
Yeah, we just hosted a Garth Brooks concert on Saturday, which was, you know, as big or bigger than a football game. And we had a local media outlet saying that's between $6 and $7 million new dollars to this community. And that change, I mean, that allows you to have a different level of hotels or more hotels and restaurants. It adds a lot. And those 7 football games to our community are important. When you look at what surrounds Autzen Stadium, we've got, you know, a youth detention center, we've got the Boy Scouts, we've got a science factory. Those folks make a large portion of their budget for the entire year off of using their properties for parking for football games.
That's what I thought you might be going with that, because the leaving the concert, I went to the Garth Brooks concert, and the Boy Scout is right next door to the football facility and the athletic department. And all of it was cars and campers, and I can only imagine how much money they made from parking. I think it was like $40 a car.
It was. So it was double a football game.
That's crazy.
We were saying, for the immediate area around our stadium, hosting Garth Brooks was the equivalent of having an 8th and 9th home football game.
That's amazing. Well, that's going to wrap up my questions. I always like to give a chance either at the beginning or the end to maybe allow you to say any mentors you had along the way, kind of show gratitude with that, if anyone, or, you know, someone on your staff, for example, that you want to shout out. I'd like to give that part to anyone. So if you have that, any mentors that help you along the way or here at Oregon.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. That's a nice touch. Obviously, you don't get anywhere in life without some great mentors. So, you know, within athletics, I've been so fortunate. Worked for Debbie Yao at the University of Marin, you know, a Hall of Famer in our business, and also worked for Jamie Pollard, who's now the athletic director at Iowa State. And those two were just outstanding mentors and gave me a great foundation to prepare me for when my opportunity came. And then I was blessed to have an opportunity to work for 8 years for Mitch Barnhart, one of the greatest people in this business. Obviously, he's a, you know, kind of the dean of the athletic directors in the SEC right now, and learned so many lessons from Mitch as a professional, as a parent, as a husband. He's just an outstanding human being, and the opportunity to work with him. And then I've been, you know, obviously so fortunate to work in different leagues with outstanding commissioners, and then here, you know, so many, I mean, phenomenal staff, and then just under a variety of great leaders. But really in this business, Debbie Yao, Jamie Pollard, and Mitch Barnhart really gave me the tools to be prepared for when this opportunity came. So I appreciate you allowing me to thank them, because, you know, in this business, you don't get to where you are, no matter what level you're at, without the people who support you.
I want to thank you and acknowledge you for the openness of allowing me to come in. I think it was only a couple of weeks ago that I reached out, and you responded to the email within a day. And so for someone that high profile of a position, I appreciate that. And being willing to come on and answer some questions.
No, it's been great to have you. I hope you enjoyed Garth Brooks. Your brother does an outstanding job on our staff. And, you know, I love what we do. You know, I think athletics plays a key role in higher education. Obviously, I'm committed to higher education, and I appreciate what you do for all of us to keep the conversation going.
And that was Rob Mullins, athletic director at the University of Oregon. And I'm Travis Smith with the Higher Ed Athletics Podcast, brought to you by Athletic Director U.